Tonight on Banfield, the Idaho quadruple murder mystery 1 month in. Are the answers hidden in video that police already have? Turns out their own body cams captured four people very close to the crime scene, very close to when the murders happened. Are the figures in the background witnesses, or possibly more than that? Also ahead, a white car speeds past a gas station a mile from the murders at 3:45 a.m. Is it the mysterious Hyundai that investigators have been looking for? They have the footage. They don't have the car. And then, police take us back to day one. Who exactly was outside the murder scene as the very first officers got to work? You'll hear details never revealed until now, directly from the captain in charge. And later, did Kaylee know something was wrong back at the food truck? Was she suspicious of something or someone? Another potential piece of the puzzle emerges from some very familiar terrain. Also, for a house break-in, a ladder would come in handy. And guess what? There's a ladder up against the house where the Idaho murders took place, and it has been there since the start. Why isn't it at a crime lab? Our Brian Enten takes you to the evidence tonight and tackles your questions on the scene on this special hour of Banfield. Hello and welcome to our special report on the University of Idaho murders. It has now been 30 full days since four University of Idaho students were stabbed to death in their home on King Road in Moscow, Idaho. And tonight, two separate and jaw-dropping leads have come to light. They happened on the same night as the murders, at roughly the same time as the murders, both of them just a mile apart. Both are on video. One we have seen before, sort of, and one is brand new. First, the brand new. It is said to come from a gas station on Troy Road, where Fox is reporting that an overnight manager going over surveillance footage spotted a white car speeding by at 3:45 a.m. on November the 13th. She alerted the authorities, and today detectives reportedly seized a whole shift's worth of video. Remember, police still need to find that white Hyundai Elantra, a 2011 to 2013 model. And it is a very safe bet that every pixel from that gas station security cam is being analyzed as we speak. The other lead is from a video that not only has been available to police since the night of the murders, they are the ones who actually produced it. It is from the body cams of the officers who cited three students for drunkenness just a short walk from the murder scene. Though police have long said that the two incidents aren't related and that they have viewed and reviewed all of the video in question, some internet sleuths spotted something, I don't know, you might say actually earth-shattering. Several people walking briskly in the background at 3 o'clock in the morning. I want you to take a close look at the videos as we zoom in and look what's going on behind the students in question. It's circled on your screens. You can see clearly four heads walking through that bright light. You can count them. 1, 2, 3, 4. Clear as a bell. It's behind the vehicle that's in the foreground there, but those four people were clearly just steps away from the police and clearly steps away from the house. If we zoom in a little more closely, you can actually make it out even easier. There they go. 1, 2, 3, 4. Almost as though they're walking in single file. Out at night at 3 o'clock in the morning, actually closer to 3:12 in the morning. And as you watch those four figures, remember, police say the murders happened between 3 and 4 in the morning. Did those people see something? Who are they? Have police tracked them down? Ask asked them any questions, ruled them out. And again, if they're ruled out, did they see something as they were on foot, walking just steps away from where the murders happened? We do not have the answers to this, any of it. But as usual, our senior national correspondent, Brian Enten, is live on the case. And tonight he is standing in that exact location, right where that body cam action took place. So, Brian, for us looking at it on television, it's hard to get the exact perspective of where the officers were standing, what direction their body cams were pointing, and where those four mysterious figures were walking from and to, and how far away they were from the actual murder scene. So can you take me there and help us get a feel?
Yeah, it's very confusing when you're looking at the body camera video, so hopefully we can give you some perspective. This is Band Field. This is where the alcohol call came in. The young men were here in the field when the police showed up. That is the Sigma Chi fraternity house right there. So the police walked those young men across the street. This is Taylor Avenue, right to this spot right here. I was able to identify it because of the fire extinguisher. And they were standing in this spot, the young men, and the body camera video was pointed this way. And it is over my shoulder where you could see very faintly what looked like several people walking fast or almost running by in the background. And I want to walk you over, Ashley, and give you a little more perspective. It was somewhere in this area right here. And we can tell because we analyzed these lights of this little apartment building. It was somewhere right in this area. There's another big apartment building here. The question you might be having is, how close is this to the house where the murders happened? Mo is going to point in that direction. Our producer is up there. She's going to flash a flashlight, Ashley. You see that flashlight flashing right there? That is right in front of the house where the murders happened. So it's all very, very close.
So what we're effectively seeing is, like, if my eyes don't deceive me, about 200 yards away from where Mo is flashing the light at the murder scene, those four figures were walking where you're standing. It's that close.
It's that close, and it appears, again, it's so hard to see it in that body camera video, but when we zoom in, it does appear that the figures are walking slash running from the direction of where the house is where the murders happened. At first, I thought they were just walking down Taylor Avenue, but when I got out here and really looked at everything, it appears they might actually be coming somewhat from the direction of the house.
And then just point to what direction they're headed. From what I'm looking at you straight on, just point the direction they were headed.
Okay, let me show you again. So up there on the hill, that's where the flashlight is flashing. That is where the house is, where the murders happened. It appears they were coming from that direction and that they were going this way, back towards Band Field, back towards the Sigma Chi house where the police were.
And it's sometimes, I just want to make sure our audience is clear. It sure sounds like you're saying Banfield, like the name of this show or my last name. It is B-A-N-D, right, as though it's a school band, and that is their field. It is the school band's field. So, but what I'm really curious is when you showed me Mo or Lauren flashing the light up at the murder scene, it looked like that's the walkway that you have shown us that leads down from the house. So is it feasible that those four people were coming down that walkway?
It's possible. And you know, I can't tell for sure. It's impossible to know for sure. Were they coming from that direction? Were they sort of walking along Taylor Avenue and it just appeared they were walking that way? We don't know. I can tell you from being out here for weeks, especially when there were more students here, this is a very busy area. You've got the frat and sorority houses. You've got a ton of apartments right here. So, you know, it doesn't mean that they're involved. I mean, and even at 3 a.m., I mean, there was the drunk kids in the field. There's all sorts of partiers walking around. I mean, you know, the likelihood is these were just some college students walking around in this area. But what do they know? Did they see something?
Well, that's the key, right? Because honestly, Brian, if you're on foot, you're moving a lot slower than if you're on, you know, in a car, say a white Hyundai driving by. And, you know, you would have seen a lot or heard a lot. You would have seen somebody running if there was someone running. You might see somebody who was wearing a red coat walking in the direction that seemed odd at 3. I mean, there's so many things police could get from those four people if they haven't yet found them. I'm curious. I haven't heard an APB put out from the police alongside the white, you know, Hyundai. What, the four people at 3:12 in the morning, we need to speak with you. I haven't heard that, and I don't know if we will hear that in the days to come, or maybe they have been found by the police. We don't know any of that, but I will say this. I'm going to read to you what the police said to us about those four people in the video, and I'm just going to tell you that the reaction seemed as though it was a bit of a surprise, but this is what was said by the public information officer, Robbie Johnson, quote, the body cam footage, the people's in the back, you never know if that's going to be part of the investigation or connected. So we want that type of material so we can make that judgment with our experts and the FBI assistants. It's a very curious comment. If they'd already spotted that, you know, movement in the background of the body cam video, I would have expected that answer to be, thank you, we are aware of everything. And we have already analyzed our video and we've got the FBI on it. But this was very much like, you know, we want that type of material so that a judgment can be made. It might be part, you know, you never know what's going to be part of the investigation. It's a curious piece of information. Do we have any idea, other than that statement, if the police knew about this or if the FBI saw the things that the cyber sleuths saw and zeroed in on and counted 1, 2, 3, 4 figures walking away from the home?
We don't know, Ashley, and I would caution you not to read too much into their statements. I mean, you know from your interview last night, they sort of give the same statement to pretty much every question, basically saying they're looking into everything. So, and they did, and they've been saying all along, anyone in this area around the time of the murders, we want to talk to you. And you mentioned, I mean, perhaps they have talked to those people in the video, but no, we just don't know. We just don't know the answers. They won't tell us.
It's astounding, I mean, to see that. And I just want to be real clear. This happened at exactly 3:12 a.m., is that correct, according to the body cam timestamps?
Yeah, which is around the time. Of course, we don't know the exact time that the murders happened, but it is around that same time, which ever since we got the body cam, I mean, it's just eerie to know that the police, I showed you how close we are, we're this close.
Right, right.
And
okay.
that could so have been happening. The murders could have been happening at the same time. It's crazy.
Right, exactly, because the window, as they've told us, Brian, is between 3 and 4 in the morning. So this is clearly 15 minutes into the window. Can I just ask you, from having been there every night for so long, how much activity is out on the street at 3 o'clock in the morning? I mean, I don't know if you're in bed by that point or if you've had a feel for the campus. I mean, is it alive and brimming with groups of four kids walking everywhere? Or would four kids walking at 3:12 in the morning be very unique?
You know, I don't have a good perspective because so many kids left and were scared to come back since we've been here. So I don't think we're getting the real feel of what the campus is like. But I've heard over and over again that this is a party school. There's a ton of frats and sororities. I think that there are people walking around here all the time at night. That's just the sense that I get because it's all kids who live around here and there's party houses. So, you know, I don't think that it's crazy traffic at 3 a.m, but I don't think it would be unusual at all for there to be groups of college students walking around at that time, going home after being out drinking.
Yeah, but I'll bet you they are far fewer at 3:12 a.m. than they are, say, when the bars get out at 1:30, the food truck's done by about 2. People might be home by 3.
Yeah.
But by 3:12, it's less, you know, it's less and less in terms of traffic. So it's easier to isolate. Okay, real quickly, I've got to get you on this car because this image that Fox released today, it's an overnight manager at a gas station nearby that said she's been going over all the surveillance tape and saw this white car whizzing by, and you've been able to identify the direction. This is key in this image, Brian. What can you tell us about the location and direction that white car is flying through their surveillance tape?
So it's about a mile away, a gas station. We know that it was around 3:45 in the morning that they caught the white car. 3:45 in the morning, same time frame as the murders. Caught the car going by. Police, of course, are looking for a white car they believe was in the area of the murders when it happened. We raced over to the gas station when Fox Digital had this photo. They've sort of shut down there, threatened to call the police on us. So our crew got out of there. But it's interesting. I mean, and we know that police, you know, have the footage.
And they've got caution tape across the front door. Ostensibly, their gas pumps are down, but they have this note saying, reporters, with any questions, please call this number. That number's disconnected. And they've shut down even entry into that gas station, which is filled with products you would sell even if your gas pumps were down. So that is extremely curious that gas station... Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the gas, the caution tape is a little misleading because they are having an outage there. Their computers are down and their gas pumps are down. That seems to have nothing to do. I don't think the caution tape has anything to do with the fact that they've got that surveillance video.
Does seem weird, though. All that potential, you know, product sales now, just because they're, I mean, why not take cash? But okay, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt on that. Next thing, critical. You got an exclusive today with the lawyer who's been hired by Kaylee Gonsalves's family, which is, you know, incredible in itself. But what did you find out?
Yeah, and let me actually, I just thought of something when you were talking. I want to remind you that I'm going to get to the lawyer. So after we went to the gas station, and you'll think this is interesting, and we weren't able to get that video, and they said they were going to call the police, we said, let's go to all the other businesses in the area, Ashley. So we found a vape shop very close by up the road with a camera that also pointed onto the roadway. And the person working inside told me that police came to their shop 9 days after the murders and asked for their video that was pointed toward the road, but that the video had been deleted because it only lasts a week. So they weren't able to give police the video. And this is right down the street from the gas station. I just remembered that, which I thought was interesting.
That's fascinating. And I'll tell you what, 9 days later, I know that you only have a couple of days to go get all the video you can, because it's not an endless storage, world out there. And if you don't go early and get everything you can, you get an answer like they got 9 days later. And that is, I'm sorry, I wish I could give you, but there's nothing to give. And I wonder how many other businesses could have been mined for that excruciatingly important, especially now that you know the direction of the car. You could have shown exactly where that car went, and we could have followed the digital trail of where that car made off to. But you know, you start 9 days late, you lose 7 days. So that's sad. Okay, so tell me about the lawyer interview. How'd that go?
Okay, yeah, back to the lawyer. So the Gonsalves family, Kaylee Gonsalves's family, one of the victims, has hired a lawyer to sort of help them navigate this process. Talk to him today. And he told me that they had a meeting with police. They're trying to improve the communication. Listen to a little bit of what he told me earlier today. Have you or the family received any new updates on the investigation?
Well, part of our delay was we met with the investigators yesterday. We met with the prosecutor, the investigators, Chief Fry, and had a meeting with all of them. Part of our that meeting, actually the kind of the theme of the meeting was two things, was accountability and communication. We had a lot of questions that we went in with. Most of them didn't get answered because they're keeping most of the information close to the vest. That being said, we also wanted to talk to them about communication. We feel like they haven't been communicating with the families, all of the families.
So they are trying to have better communication. He mentioned, you know, the families were frustrated. They were learning about things through press releases, and they're hoping now that they'll have a more open dialogue. He did basically tell me right now they have faith in the investigation and they are hopeful.
Okay, well, Brian, thank you for that. I think that's critical, that piece. There is another thing I want you to do, and I'm going to give you a moment to reset with Mo back up to where Lauren is standing. I have a question about something that was discovered at the house that I can't believe I didn't see it, but now I've seen it and I'm astounded by it. And I want you to take me there in a moment. So, Brian, I'm going to come back to you in a moment. But joining me now is Mike King, and he's a 28-year veteran of law enforcement in Utah and former director of a cold case unit. Mike, you saw that video that we played at the top of the program. Four figures walking what looked to be in single file within 200 yards of the murder scene, and as Brian just attested, in the direction that comes away from the home. I just keep wondering, why hasn't there been an APB from Moscow police saying, please tell us who you are, or if you know who these four are, we need to speak with them about anything, what they saw, what they did, who they are. Isn't that just as important as the white Hyundai?
Oh, sure. But we have to also take into account that even though the PIO may not know anything about that video, my hope is that law enforcement did. But again, I mean, sometimes you get so focused on the forest, you miss the trees. And this is like one of those really cool parts about the true crime community, programs like this, Ashley, where information comes out that maybe was missed, and then we have to go back and have some kind of a reconciliation. And I appreciated Brian's words, because it really is good advice to all of us to kind of look at these things with a little bit of caution, not jump to conclusions, because sometimes we want to believe something so badly we start seeing things that maybe aren't there. They definitely need to know who these people are. But another thing that really came out important in tonight's interviews with Brian was the fact that there are a batch of kids wandering around that community during those late hours, evidenced by the police video cam, not only with the people in the background, but the fact that there was a party probably still going on or breaking down just a few feet away. And, you know, it is disturbing that it was about a football and a half field away from the location of these homicides. But again, we got to be just really cautious and try to look at everything with some balance.
That killer had to get away from the house. He had to get away on wheels or on foot. And it is more than likely he passed somebody at some point. Was it those four kids, or are the kids? I don't know who they are. Is that possibly more sinister? I mean, there's so many questions that you have to ask about that. And you're right. Maybe the police already know. I didn't get that feeling today. One quick question. Look, our technology is, you know, pretty good. We work in television, but it ain't FBI good. So what tools do the professionals have to enhance that video? How much more can they get out of that than I can, or that, you know, I can show the viewers?
Well, you can certainly see a lot more when you start to diffuse it a little, get rid of some of the color in video. Obviously, they've gone into the video that we're looking at, and they've covered up a lot of valuable information that we would probably see if they weren't blurring out faces and other things. So the technology can get us closer, but again, we're dealing with technology after hours, so night vision, trying to collect all of that camera imagery after dark, and that gets pretty darn sketchy.
Boy, I hope that they can do a lot with that, and I sure hope that at least this broadcast, you know, lets police know, if they don't already, what they got to work with and how they might put out an APB, you know, because we, honestly, we asked about this stuff early on, the background video. We asked about the band field incident video, and we just kept getting the same answer. It's not related. And that's not why we were asking. We wanted to see what was in the background. We knew that those kids probably had nothing to do with it. It's just a bunch of drunk kids. But it's always the other stuff in the background that can be so helpful. Mike, as always, can't thank you enough. Will you come back again?
Sure.
Awesome. Thank you. Mike King doing the job for us today. He's in Utah instead of Australia like he was last time. He's on the move. All right. So it has come to this, everyone. Death threats from cyber sleuths who think they've uncovered the killer and are taking action on their own. The police captain says you are ruining people's lives and you could go to jail. But he's also talking about who else was on the scene that horrible Sunday morning. And then later, a closer look at Kaylee and Maddie's last night alive. Was Kaylee trying to send a secret message or a warning to Maddie while they were at the food truck? And is it possible this was overlooked? It is all straight ahead. Imagine being a police captain in a small town that plays host to the University of Idaho. These pictures are idyllic. You know, all told, with the students, it is a population here in Moscow of 26,000 people. And that is roughly a third of the size of an average football stadium. It's about as Mayberry as it gets. Now imagine getting that awful call on a Sunday afternoon. Captain Roger Lanier took that call a month ago today, November 13th, and he is just now talking about those first few moments, those first few hours, how the investigation began, how it grew, and what the hardest part of it is now, aside from finding the killer of four kids, of course. He drops some new and compelling details in yet another media release where investigators strangely themselves ask and answer their own questions with no reporters present to hold them publicly accountable for their work. And with that as the caveat, some of today's remarks are really worth hearing. Take a listen.
I got called at home. It was on a Sunday afternoon, and it took me a second. I really had to think about what I had just heard. Four murders in Moscow, Idaho is so out of character. Once I got over the initial shock, I knew that I was coming to the station. So I drove in, and everybody just kind of fell into a role. That was an all-hands-on-deck moment. The scene wasn't chaos, you know, the neighborhood, but it was very, very somber. That is a community of college students that live over there. Many of them, through word of mouth, knew what had happened. They were standing outside. There was a lot of crying. There were friends trying to find out who exactly was inside the house. Some family members that arrived on scene. It was incredibly hard for the community, but it was also really, really hard on our officers, some of whom were very young, and that was the first real major crime scene that they had encountered. The general public doesn't have any idea the scope of this investigation. We have the FBI's command post in our parking lot. Everything that they would normally do down in Salt Lake City, they're doing right here in our parking lot. So the team effort has been amazing. It's been overwhelming at times, but there are so many people with so much expertise.
What role has speculation, rumors, and the conversations on social media play in the investigation?
Yeah, that has been by far the most frustrating part of this. Just look at social media and the rumors that fly out there. A small piece of information that has speculation added to it just takes its own life on the internet and starts rumors. And then we find ourselves not only tracking those rumors down and trying to quell them, but also we see our tips that come in are geared more toward the rumor, not the facts that have been put out. And the really unfortunate part of it is the effect that it's had on the victims' families, on the college students and friends of these of the victims, some of whom have had death threats. This investigation is not cold. Every single day we get a good amount of viable tips, and those tips help us do everything from clear people who maybe there was some speculation about to further some of the theories that we're working on. Eventually, and we see this coming, eventually we're going to narrow in on exactly what happened and who did it.
We certainly all look forward to that moment. Still ahead tonight, does it all come back to the grub truck? We have all seen this footage, Kaylee and Maddie ordering food, milling about in their last hours alive, but did Kaylee see something that bothered her? And did she signal her friend silently? And should the police be taking another look at that video and at Kaylee's phone? We're going to show you exactly what. Welcome back. There is a reason that police question witnesses and suspects more than one time, and sometimes over and over and over again. There's always a chance that you're going to find out something new. And the same goes with pictures. Pictures don't change like our memories do. But you could see something on the 9th or the 10th viewing that you might have missed before. And what I'm about to show you may be case in point. It's a video from the food truck where Kaylee and Maddie stopped on their way home after the bar. That was mere hours before they were murdered. They're laughing and they're smiling in the now familiar video. And of course, behind them is that now familiar man in the white hoodie. He's lurking behind them. And for 10 minutes or so, the girls really don't pay him any attention until Maddie has some sort of altercation with him of sorts. And she appears to say, F you. At least she says that in his direction. And we've seen that before, but there is something that we may have missed in all of this. Kaylee, at one point, is seen nodding with her head towards. See that? Look at that fake out. Like, look at this guy behind me. She's kind of doing that head fake to Maddie, as if she's saying, check him out, silently. And then later she lifts her phone way up high. I thought she was taking a picture of the food or maybe of Maddie, but it is entirely possible that she is actually turning her body in such a way that she's doing like a selfie above her in reverse to capture the man in the hoodie standing behind her. That might be what she's actually doing when she raises that phone up and turns her body and steps. Maybe not, but it's possible. Here is another suspicious moment. Maddie seems to bend forward at one point, and it looks like she's, again, saying something to the man in the hoodie, who kind of puts his hands up in reaction to whatever it is she's leaning forward and saying towards him. But you can see she leans forward, and she appears to say something, and it's hard to catch it, but his hands are up as though whatever, some reaction. We now know that the girls eventually rode home with a car service and not with the man in the hoodie. And police say the man in the hoodie has been identified. He's been interviewed, and at least for now, he has been cleared. I want to run all of this by Casey Jordan. She is a criminologist. She is a behavioral analyst. She's an attorney, and she is a professor of justice and law at Western Connecticut State University. Dr. Jordan, you know more about this than just about anybody I've ever worked with. But what do you make of these videos?
Oh, well, for starters, Ashley, I don't know enough to really compose a good investigative profile. But these videos, I mean, they came out in the first 48 hours. They were incredibly important. And you can be sure that the police have interviewed everyone you see in the video. Hopefully these people, as soon as the food truck video came forward, called the police, went down and talked to them about everything they saw and remembered and tried to assist. White hoodie guy was among them. So when we go through it frame by frame, and it's worth doing, but let's remember the police have done this as well. I see a guy who's trying to up his game, picking up girls outside a food truck, you know, down the road from the nightclub. He's I don't want to call him a dork, but I mean, he's trying to chat up girls. Anyone who has been in this sort of situation or gone to college knows that guys will do this. Maybe they're trying to go home with somebody. I think she's mocking him. You're right. Maybe she is taking that picture of him, raising her phone up high and putting the camera on reverse to catch him in the background. But then when curious, did she send that photo to somebody to say, look at this loser trying to pick us up at the food truck? The thing is, the police have talked to him and they cleared him almost immediately. So,
well, you know what, though?
He has an alibi.
So I get it, but it happened really early, and the family's kind of annoyed that people get cleared so fast. I was actually surprised that people were cleared almost within the first week or two, it felt like. I don't think I'm wrong there. But here's the question I have. It takes hours and hours to go over these videos and look at every single, you know, spot of action and then rewatch it for another spot of action. And a lot of people are noticing this, and we're 30 days into this story. So I just wonder if, you know, 3 weeks ago, if Hoodie Guy was cleared, and now we're seeing Maddie appear to signal, or rather Kaylee signal to Maddie, look at this guy. Look at this guy behind me. As all girls know, we've all done it. And then take that picture. Might they now reconsider and say, you know, we hadn't seen that before. It might be time to ask, you know, more questions of the guy in the hoodie.
Okay, except that when they say cleared, it means that they have absolute reason to believe this person is not a suspect. I mean, it's a really big thing when you clear a suspect. Now, let's agree. Sometimes they're watching somebody and they put them on the cleared list because they want to watch what they do to see if they implicate themselves further. But for the most part, they don't say someone's cleared unless they have verified, validated, well, an alibi. And they
I'll
know that person.
Go ahead. If there is a homicidal maniac out on the street who's prepared to jam a knife into four kids while they sleep, I would expect that the police would not say, nothing to see here, everybody's been cleared, so that they could just watch him. I get why they do that. I get that they want suspects to put their guard down, but I don't think they should be allowing the people of Moscow, Idaho, to put their guard down because they think that guy has been cleared. Police do operate in different ways. I do want you to see one other thing before I run out of time, and then we can talk about all of it. There's another video after Kate, you know, after Maddie leaning over and kind of looking to say something or yell something at the guy in the hoodie. If we roll that video right after she does that, Maddie points towards the street. Let's go full with that video so Casey can see it really well. If we go full up with that video, she points off camera towards the street, and it sounds like, it looks like she's trying to get her girlfriend's attention. She wants Kaylee to look, and then eventually Kaylee does kind of look up for her phone and look off. It's possible that's the ride that was taking them home, but I do think it's curious that they both acknowledge something happening off camera behind the food truck. What do you see there?
I think that they are about to get into their ride home. Here's the thing. Everyone's watched this video. Everyone knows who everyone in the video is by now. And I want to let you know, I agree with you. I don't think they should clear anyone. Everyone is a suspect until they actually catch the person responsible. And yet what I think they're trying to do is say, we talked to this guy and his alibi was ironclad. Frankly, I think the former boyfriend of Kaylee was cleared very quickly. And I would have loved to hear them say, instead of we looked in those phone calls and decided there's no involvement, I would have loved to have them say, we know for a fact where he was all night that night. I mean, if police can say that about white hoodie guy, ex-boyfriends, the rideshare driver, that would be incredibly helpful. At this point, them being tight-lipped is fueling the rumor mill, and I think that's half of this problem and why we're going over the video. The video is fascinating, but I don't think the killer is in the video.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on the clearing people quickly, but look at JonBenet's parents. They kept them under an umbrella of suspicion for decades. And so, you know, I find it very curious that within hours and days, nothing to see here. And these people were, you know, allowed to go their ways. Casey, good to have you. I can't wait to have you back. Thank you so much. Dr. Jordan, brilliant.
So much. Appreciate to talk it. About.
Still to come, the one piece of evidence that has everybody asking for a much closer look. It has been at the crime scene since day one, and it certainly could have helped the killer gain access to the second, maybe even third floor of the house. Brian Enten is there now. He is going to show you and point out exactly where that evidence is and answer the question, why is it not in a lab somewhere being analyzed? Don't miss it. We are back with Brian Enten, and he is live outside of the house where the Idaho College kids were murdered. In just a minute, he's going to give us an up-close view of some potential key evidence, a piece of it that's been outside the house, exposed to the elements since the morning of the murders. But first, I want to get a question to you, Brian. This one comes from Pipers on Twitter. Pipers asks, this was a known party house. How would the perp know that they weren't having a lot of people over that night?
I think that one's easy to answer. You know, there's a lot of windows in front of the house. You would easily know if there was a party going on. You'd probably hear it out on the street. You'd see people in the windows. So I think as you were walking up, you'd be able to tell if it was quiet or if there was a party going on.
Okay. Has it been revealed why the FBI was so quick to respond? That's Zach on Twitter.
No, and we don't know the exact timeline. Today, in that police captain interview, he said they first called the Idaho State Police and that the FBI were quick to be on the case. They've got their mobile command unit, by the way, I saw today behind the police department, so they can do all the processing there. So there are definitely still a number of agents here working.
Okay, Brian, stay right where you are, because after the break, I want you to do something for us. Something that made a lot of eagle-eyed sleuths, you know, kind of take a second look. They spotted something as they combed the images of the crime scene. Is it something that the killer used to get into the house? And did the police give it the scrutiny that it deserves? Brian Enten's going to show it to you next. A program note, this Thursday, we'll have a special report on transgender health care for minors, why some prominent members of the trans community are now telling News Nation too many kids are being rushed through the process too young. And Rich McHugh Reports airs Thursday night at 8, 7 Central on Cuomo, only on News Nation. We are back with Brian Enten outside the crime scene, and some of our social media sleuths, Brian, noticed something pretty interesting leaning against the house. It is that ladder. Brian, I want you to sort of walk me to where it exists in that whole geographic space and why it's significant.
Yeah, so if you're looking at the house, it's on the right side, and we're going to walk around this truck to show you. And it's hard to see tonight because where the security car is parked, they've still got security out here 24/7 because it's a crime scene. It's kind of blocking it, but you can still see it if Mo zooms in. Do you see it, Ashley? The ladder up against the house right there.
Yes.
On the side.
I can.
There's actually, you can't see because of the car, but there's actually police tape tied to it. And it's been there ever since I can remember.
Been there since the beginning of the investigation from how we have been able to see things. And as Mo pulls out, you can see directly above the ladder on the front of the house, that's Zana's room, presumably, if all of the estimations have been accurate. Can that ladder extend up to that that window? And is there a ledge under that window where if you went up that ladder, could you get into her room through that window?
You know, I don't think it's one of those ladders that extends. I think it's a fold-out. You know, I've been seeing it for weeks. I'm going to look more closely in the daylight tomorrow, but I think it's one of those ones that folds out and almost looks like an A. I don't think it's one of the ones that extends and that to like get up to a window or something like that.
So then answer me this, because that slope of the ground slopes up to the back of the house and ends up being the first floor. You know, where the ground slopes up, it ends up being the first floor behind the kitchen. If you were to move that ladder to the back of the house, is it tall enough to get up to the third floor? That sounds weird. I get it from this angle. But from the back, is it tall enough to get up to the balcony that's out the third floor of Maddie and Kaylee's rooms?
So I think it's tall enough. And if we had time, I'd walk back there. I know there's not a lot of time left in your show. But I think it's tall enough to get onto that balcony because the balcony is not that high. So I think you could probably get on the balcony with that ladder. But it's not, you know, it's not like, again, it's not, it doesn't look like it's one of the ones that would extend so you could get up really, really high.
Okay. And then another question that's really important. Is it possible that the police brought that ladder with them to do their investigating, you know, and then tied the crime scene tape to it? For me, as a reporter, I would think that is not possible, but I have to ask because they did tie their crime scene tape to it. Like a piece of evidence at the house got it was almost used as a way to go around the corner.
It is possible. It's also possible, I thought about this, was it laying down and they needed something to tie the crime scene tape there? So they, you know, propped it up because there's nothing else really there to tie the crime scene tape to. That seems like a possibility. But again, I mean, we've looked at the pictures from the earliest pictures we have. It does seem like it's been there the whole time. And a lot of people online have zeroed in on it and been very, very curious about it.
I'm curious about it. I get it why they're curious. Brian, as usual, a phenomenal job, especially off the top of the show, showing us the perspective of those four figures and where they were walking, how close they were to the police and how close they were to the murder scene. Thank you. I look forward to additional reports from you tomorrow night. That's it for us. And speaking of tomorrow night, how about this? Was it a man or a woman? Do they have the DNA yet to tell us? Because when they do, shouldn't they? We'll see you right back here tomorrow night.